Amused Bouche is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network. Listen to your city at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Guys, I had to nervous pee before I met these ladies. I just want you to know.
All right, round one done.
Woo.
And we're back.
I'm ready for more.
After we have reset our bodies. All right, Sarah. So moving on to round deux.
Yeah, round two. So round two comes with popcorn.
Me.
I like popcorn.
I love popcorn.
So tell me why popcorn.
So I had a moment. I think I mentioned I have a daughter and I'm a single mom. There may have been a time when I was driven to drink.
Weird. I did that for my mommy.
And, you know, we watched a lot of movies together. So, you know, we would kind of get together. And so as a single mom, too, I mean, as much of a wine lover as I am, I didn't always want to open a bottle of wine because, like, I'm not going to drink a whole bottle of wine. So the cool thing about sake, which everyone should make a note of, is that you can open up a bottle of sake, keep it in your refrigerator for weeks.
Ooh, cool. How many weeks?
So I have actually lost a bottle of sake open in my refrigerator for 6 months, and it was fine.
Wow. Okay, this changes the game for me. Yeah. Because I drink very little generally at a time, and I don't want to feel compelled, but then I feel guilty because I don't want to waste a thing. And this is now, once sake, you're doing it for me.
Yeah, it's I will not cool. have this issue, but I applaud yeah. your resilience.
This is how you know that I'll have some for you when you come over. Exactly. It'll be in the fridge.
I love it.
So it has to be kept in the fridge. It will go bad much more quickly if it's on the counter. But sake is brewed in the presence of oxygen. So it does not deteriorate. It also doesn't have the same sort of things inside of it that would oxidize and sort of fall apart in the bad way that wine does. So my point is, I poured myself a glass of sake and we were going to watch like Mulan or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. I made a big old thing of popcorn and I sat down and like absentmindedly sipping my sake and take some popcorn and like the world stopped turning on its axis for a moment. I was like, what just happened? One of the best like food pairing moments of my life.
I'm so excited.
To the point that back when we could go to movies, I would actually smuggle sake, sometimes available in sort of smaller size bottles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fit very nicely in a woman's handbag into the movies.
Disclaimer is just running on the ticker tape below.
Yeah. Yeah. Do not do this.
Do it. We don't.
Do it. We don't give a shit.
I'm not paying for your lawyer.
A sidebar. So I actually did this with my daughter. I had a bottle of sake in my purse. We went to a movie and it was this small little narrow bottle and movie starts. I open it up and I start to try to put it in the cup holder.
Oh God.
The cup holder has a big hole in
it. Oh no.
And it legit just went right through the hole. I got so lucky because I had put the seal back on. It just bounced. It made a tremendous noise. But you know, talk about Mom,
you know,
like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, let me have my mommy juice.
That's
okay.
Right.
So anyway, so round two comes with popcorn. And so what I want to just sort of chat about the science of this. Sake is very high in amino acids. Amino acids are broken down pieces of proteins, and they are the building blocks for what we call umami, which I know you've talked a little bit about.
Yeah.
It's a fifth taste, right? And it's sort of this wonderful deliciousness, this spreading deliciousness in the palate. Umami is enhanced by salt. So actually one of the reasons why sake and sushi go so well together is not even so much about the fish. It has to do with the soy sauce.
Salt, salt, salt. I love salt.
Yes, exactly. So when you have buttery, salty popcorn and you have a beverage that's high in umami and high in these amino acids, it just kind of sings. Mm-hmm. So the first sake on your left here is called the Drunken Whale. It's easily remembered. It actually has a very cute whale on the bottle.
Pleasantly plump.
That's the humpback whale.
He's humpy.
This actually was named for a samurai lord, a shogun, who was a very heavy drinker and was rumored to be able to drink anyone under the table. And they said he could even get a whale drunk.
Oh, boy.
So that's where we got this.
How about a leviathan?
So smelling this, it's got really pretty, almost like a grassy, more of like almost a tart green apple note.
I can get that for sure.
It also does, of course, smell a little bit like rice. Yeah. A little bit like mineral water. This is a drier style of sake. So do you take a taste?
I get a little like lemongrass.
Mm. I get lemongrass as well. And then I would suggest that you try it with the popcorn.
But before we do even, like, Drier, yes. But I still wouldn't call it dry.
Yeah, so that's very interesting. Sake has more residual sugar in it than most wines do. And they're more noticeable because sake is much less acidic than wine. So wine and sugar and acid balance each other out, which is why you add sugar to your lemonade, right? The girls are trying the popcorn and their eyes are rolling back in their heads.
Trying to get my crunches away from the microphone. All right.
That does accentuate it.
For me, it's like cutting the sweetness at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's mitigating that and sort of carrying it through the salt factor instead.
Yeah.
So I get this sort of more deliciousness out of both. And one of the weird things for me it becomes kind of a flavor enhancer. So where the popcorn itself is kind of covered in butter and salt, to me, the sake brings out the corniness of the popcorn.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I can dig it. I can dig it.
It tastes more like, oh my gosh. So this might be a shout out to Harris Teeter, but I think they have a brand of just like popped popcorn in a bag that is I think it's called movie theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something or other.
Yeah.
But it has that like, there's something really extra about it beyond like a pack, like a thing that you'd put in the microwave, but it has that extra note. And this is like pulling that extra,
but also
unctuousness out of it. Like you put that buttery swirl on top of it.
See, and I had to make a deliberate choice here to make sure I did not grab Jacob's like organic butterless air pop nonsense. That's I got to go with the movie butter. Like
it is a vessel for butter.
Get the good stuff. Yeah. So the salt here is, I think, really enhancing the umami of the sake, and they really kind of go together in a beautiful way. This, I confess, is one of the sakes that did it for me. This sake is this really interesting balance of clean and dry, but when you sit on it for a minute, you notice that umami lingers on the palate, right? You really start to kind of get a sense of tasting umami, which can be a very hard flavor, if you will, for people, especially Americans, to understand. You know, in Japan, they grow up talking about umami. They grow up talking a lot more than we do about the relationship between the nose to the mouth. So the dialogue about food in Japan and how we respond to it is very different than it is in the United States. And
why did it take so long? It feels like umami was just discovered 20 years ago in the U.S.
It's trendy here, and it's
like what happened? Why didn't we talk about umami for so long?
So the fifth taste itself was not actually discovered until around the turn of the 20th century. So the early 1905 or something like that, they discovered these glutamic acids that caused this and noticed that there were particular sensors like on your taste buds that could taste this. And there's actually some research that part of the importance of umami, and there's especially larger sensors toward the back of the tongue, is that it's meant to help little babies learn to nurse. Oh, so there's a lot of umami in breast milk, a sort of a sweetness in breast milk. So the idea that a little baby needs to eat to survive, so the more that a baby eats, right, the more they want to nurse, the more deliciousness there is, right, the more they're going to go for that. So there's a lot of research there. Their discovery of this is actually what led to the invention of MSG. So monosodium glutamate was invented as a flavor enhancer because
huge
of that.
Huge fan. Mm-hmm. Use it.
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and then the reason why, though, we were late is that, you know, when you think about the history of cooking shows, even in the United States, right? I mean, think about what were we watching on PBS. It was like, it's all about French cooking, you know?
Great Chefs, Great Cities.
Yeah. You know, you put the butter on the turkey.
Exactly.
Right. So there was this huge thing through the 60s and 70s and 80s. It was all about French cooking. You know, you would go to higher end restaurants. It was, you know, Ercovert and rice pilaf, right?
Yep.
It really took a long time before, you know, and actually it's easier in many ways because by our as a human being, we want to be fat, right? We want to
survive. That's what I've been telling people.
Pretty much. So, you know, it's easy to make things taste delicious using a lot of fat. So, you know, this French style of cooking, European style of cooking.
Yeah, butter and,
cream, all of that. Yeah, was very much embraced. It took a while for, you know, the West to actually realize, wait a minute, you know, there's this whole other way of making food incredibly delicious using this fifth taste, having an understanding of umami, and also this understanding of how to like ferment foods, basically. Yeah. So this now become a big wave here. But I think it just historically has just been, you know, A, because this was discovered in Asia, it's been a part of that culture. And then also we were so captivated by, you know, French cooking for such a long time.
And then we had like Paula Deen. Like then we got stuck with that.
That's like that's like pretty much that's like Dr. Frankenstein being like, you know what I can do with butters? I can deep fry it. Let's just take it to a whole other
county
level.
County fair style.
That's right.
So I want to do something with you guys. I want to try this Drunken Whale warm. Oh. Because on your first podcast, I heard you guys had tried some warm sake, and maybe it was a little bit like gasoline.
It was very...
So, well, and I would love for you to answer this. I think we had a conversation about it that we never really came to fruition.
Right.
Is warm sake served warm because it's lower quality, or why is that choice made?
Yeah, why do people get some warm and some cold?
So this has been one of those big misunderstandings, I think. So now I will say there is plenty of sake that is lower quality that is served warm.
Okay. So my misunderstanding is not unfounded.
You're half right.
But there are plenty of incredibly high quality sakes, including the one we're about to taste, that are fantastic served warm. So, you know, sake has been served warm for eons in Japan. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for this. One of them even just being that the idea of if you're having a hot meal, you want to have a warm beverage with it. It can be kind of a shock to the system to, you know, have a ice cold beverage with like hot soup, for instance. The other thing is that the sort of way that we perceive the sake is dramatically changed when it's warmed. The other issue that is a major problem in the U.S. is that there are people who serve sake that is fine warm, but they are overheating it. So it really does like go down like a Molotov cocktail, you know, sort of like, wow.
Yeah.
And then secondly, there are some issues where we have where people maybe aren't just like where you have to clean your lines for your draft system in a restaurant.
Yeah.
You do have to also clean your sake warmer. And so we've had some instances where people maybe have not done that and then their sake
it's
starts
like
to
slime in the warmer.
Taste a little funny. Yeah. So, but ultimately there are 9 different recognized temperatures for sake service in Japan.
Oh my God.
And there are
Doesn't surprise me, but
that is
please
nuance.
Continue.
Yeah. And there are actually sake bars dedicated where you can go and they will pour you the sake cold or at room temperature, and then they'll warm it right before your eyes to a very specific temperature.
How cool!
And then you can taste them side by side. So that's what I kind of wanted to do today.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a little game.
Okay.
I have little cups for you guys to pick from. So one of the things we do sometimes in Japanese restaurants is you get to pick your cup.
Okay.
And these are traditional little Japanese ochoko little cups.
Okay.
So pick
this
your,
is like
pick your
for listeners. This is like what you expect when you think
a little
you're drinking sake.
A little carafe, and then
yes.
Is this gonna? Is this like a fortune cookie?
What does everybody have in their cup?
I have a bullseye.
You guys got the snake eye, and I got. So here's the thing. I brought 2 with smiley faces.
Oh,
so
you got one.
Why don't you guys take the smiley faces? So just to talk about these cups. So what your listeners can't see is that there are 2 concentric circles in the bottom of these cups, and they are this beautiful sort of indigo blue. And so there's white and blue striped circles inside the bottom of the cup. And the reason why these circles are there are so that you can evaluate the color and the clarity of the sake.
Oh.
So if the sake is a cloudy sake and you can't see, you know, the blue circles, you're like, oh, it's a cloudy sake.
Yeah.
And maybe it has a little bit of color to it, so you're not seeing pure white. So these cups, you know, developed over time, and I bought perfectly warmed sake. So
what temperature is it?
So this is what we would consider a atsukan.
This is 7 on the scale.
Okay.
So a hot sake. I warmed it up. So it's probably closer to a jokan at this point. So I warmed it to about 120 degrees.
Oh
it may be closer to like 115 now or so.
Okay.
So generally you are supposed to hold your cup up and then they will pour the sake.
Mm.
You also never pour your own sake like I'm doing right now.
We should have poured that for you.
It's no problem.
We got you from
so
here on
one
out.
More kanpai. Let's
kanpai.
Cheers and let's see what you think of this warm.
This is the Drunken Whale.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I like that actually.
That's nice.
Totally different, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to try it cold again, then we can go back and forth. It's a really remarkable difference.
It does taste like more alcoholic to me, though.
It does. It does. The alcohol does pop a little bit, but mm-hmm. you'll notice it might taste a little sweeter to you.
That's what I got. Yeah. It tasted a little bit sweeter to me. And then also, it does... All of the sake from the first one that we've tasted has like given me a nice little warm hug. But then when it's a warmed sake, it's given me that extra warm hug mm-hmm. like down my esophagus, which I'm a big fan of.
So I would suggest trying popcorn again.
Yep.
Because the other thing that's happening here is that our perception of these acids are changing because it's warm. So when you warm this sake, it doesn't come across quite as dry. Mm-hmm. It seems a little sweeter. The umami is enhanced. So the yep. amino acid content actually is rising. In terms of our perception.
That's exactly what happened to me. The sweetness on the warm sake hits me sooner, and it lingers on the cold version. Mm-hmm. It takes a little bit longer to get to that.
I just smelled my microphone because I thought it was my cup. So I might already be reaching my limit.
I mean.
So totally different. So the same sake, yeah. two different temperatures, and just a very marked difference.
I really liked it. My very first taste of it warm. I would say I prefer it warm to cold, and mm-hmm. I don't know that I would have expected that. And then the flavor has mellowed for me.
Yes.
With the popcorn.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. I will yep. say this is a very traditional type of thing that you would get in a restaurant in Japan, especially sort of an izakaya type place. This wants fried foods. You yeah. know, this wants like, you know,
don't mind if I do.
Right. Exactly. So
I have to ask, because you said this earlier, and I just have to ask, is the correct pronunciation tempura, not tempura?
Yes.
Like we say.
Tempura.
Okay. I'm going to take my education where I can get it.
My sister lived in Japan for a while. So I've been wanting so badly to, she got her degree in Japanese. And so I've wanted so badly to go to Japan with her. But now I'd rather go with you. Don't tell her.
If we need to go and do a remote.
Let's just all go together. Look. But yeah, we need to go on an international trip. Are you down?
Yeah, I would love it.
That sounds great. We're doing it.
Do we have sponsors for that on the podcast?
We'll find them.
Okay, cool.
So one last story on these cups is a lot of people, I think, don't understand. So first of all, higher quality sake, we do really want to try to enjoy out of a wine glass because it enhances the aroma. Mm-hmm. And this has been a big change in the industry. These small cups, though, have a tremendous history. Every single prefecture in Japan is known for their own sort of signature styles of pottery, even glassware, mm-hmm. Making these cups. And so the problem is with these cups is that when you put them in front of Americans, we think it's a shot glass.
Yeah.
So we're like, shots, you know, toss it back. But the idea of how you never pour for yourself, you only pour for your neighbor. So sake, you know, coming to the table in Japan is sort of the great equalizer. Mm. So going all the way back to the time of the shogunate, you know, there were times when people would eat together, you know, with, you know, people of very high ranking in society. And when everyone sat at the table, you know, you would still pour for your, you know, seniors, they would pour for you. It was a great equalizer. And the idea of pouring for one another actually forces you to interact with people. So it sort of helps to like make your time together a more interactive one.
And this, I think, also brings back that there are individualist cultures and there are collectivist cultures. And this is another community-focused type of activity that you would not expect from an individualist culture. There are so many nuances and in unique ways that those types of behaviors are reinforced. And like, this seems so simple, but it shows such care for those around you.
Yeah. And the issue too is, you know, in Japan, sometimes people do shoot the sake, but technically you're still supposed to sip out of a small cup in the same way that you would out of your wine glass. You'll just notice that you don't get the same aromatic mm-hmm. kind of, it's a lot harder to smell in a little cup like that.
I mean, I've had bad wine and not wine glasses, so we'll make do, but yeah.
Red Solo cup.
That's right. Exactly.
You've got a water bottle right there. Like I'm not beneath it, but.
So Abby, I think you noticed the next sake was kind of a horse of a different color.
Yeah, right? Quite literally. Yep. Not the horse part. It's not a horse.
So our next sake is a rosé.
It's pink. It's so cute.
It is really cool. It's called the Pink Lady. And it's from one of my favorite breweries, a place called Amabuki, which is located in Saga, Japan, on the southern island of Kyushu. And this brewery is famous because they only use yeast isolated on flowers to ferment the sake. And there are a couple of different ways to make a pink sake. They can use a red koji, which can kind of result in some funky flavors. They can use a special pink yeast, which is very hard to control. So only a few real masters actually play with it. But
there's a joke in there. I'm not going to say it.
But we'll just keep only on, the masters know how to just play it back slowly.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
It's already done.
This is done using that purple forbidden rice. So that dark rice, sometimes you might have had like a special rice peel off. People can buy it at the store here. Yeah. Even if you think about like Uncle Ben's like wild rice, that dark rice. So and it's not the long grains though. These are little round pieces of rice that look more like the type of rice you'd use to make a risotto.
Like an arborio.
Yes. In fact, arborio is a subset of the Japonica rice strain that they make sake with. Yeah.
Love that.
Very cool.
We're learning so much stuff.
We're learning so much, and I'm having a great time with this particular sake.
This is delicious.
Isn't it yummy?
And here's the thing, like, Jen, you and I have been fairly on the same page with all of the sakes, and like for both of us to say we love this, that doesn't happen with wine or beer for us.
Usually it's like something that is sicky sweet. Like,
and then I'm like, all about it.
Yeah, that's my jam. And I'm like, I want to throw it in the trash.
Like we have done now. I feel like we've unlocked something here that like we can enjoy together.
The great equalizer.
That's so exciting.
Oh my God. We have to cheers on that.
Kanpai.
So what's kind of cool about this is that stuff that gives this its color are the same compounds, the anthocyanins, that are in the skins of grapes. So, you know, red wine gets its color from the red skins of the grape. So they had a little bit of a conundrum when they made this sake. They were like, well, you know, what do we do here? Because if we make it all from this red rice, it actually doesn't taste very good. It tastes kind of, you know, funky and medicinal. So they're like, well, let's try to polish the rice. Well, the problem was that when they polished the dark rice, it was white on the middle, just like red grapes are clear in the middle for the most part.
Wow.
So they were like, that doesn't work. So what they decided to do was to make a sake using a local white rice, a flower of Saga, Saga no Hana rice. Oh,
and so you know, sexy.
It is.
Everything has been super sexy.
And alcohol is a solvent, right? So once alcohol was present in the sake, they were able to basically put a tea bag of this forbidden rice into the vat, and the alcohol helped to release those anthocyanins into the sake, giving it its color and a little bit of that extra something that you're tasting there, a little bit more of that sort of aromatics and richness, a little bit of that herbaceousness that you're tasting.
And it lingers. Like it's the one of all of these they've tasted, they have their experience and then they kind of dissipate.
You know what
this
I like.
This one is a long finish.
A long finish, girl.
Yeah, and it's there. Like, I'm still enjoying that. And it's changed a little bit, but it's still on my palate.
It's another one that I recommend with the popcorn, just to say.
The murmur.
So, yeah, have more popcorn. There's plenty of popcorn to go around. Anyway, these both are what we call junmai sake. So, you know, coming back to this sort of style and, you know, the classifications. The, you know, sake is sort of organized in Japan not too differently than the way that we would sort of organize wine in the grocery store here in North Carolina, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sure all of your listeners have maybe been into a Harris Teeter, perhaps.
I would hope.
They would think by now. And you guys actually did a grocery store wine tasting.
We sure did.
I listened. I was like,
I'm embarrassed that you listened to that now with my ignorance.
I hope I picked some good ones.
It was very good.
I got some of them right.
You did great.
You did really well.
That is really hard, and you did great.
You did so well.
Thank you for validating me.
It's true. So anyway, my point is when, you know, when you walk into the grocery store, you know, there's sort of a large amounts of like pallets of inexpensive stuff, right? Mm-hmm. That's sort of like, oh, I'm going to have a party. So I'm grabbing these big bottles of cheapy stuff, right? In fact, I think you even had like a little, like a Boda Box one, right?
Yes, we did.
Which was surprisingly not bad.
There are actually some that are very good. You know, we like poo-poo the box because it's been like historically was never very good.
Franzia.
Yeah. But in Europe and Australia, like you have some really good quality stuff. In a box, just to say. So don't put it down. But maybe my point is that when you go into that store, right, lots of stuff that's very inexpensive, and then you look on the wall, and then there's like, you know, it can be very expensive, right? So there's like these big walls of wine. So the pyramid that you see where we have these classifications of sake that start with like junmai and honjozo, and they go all the way up to these.
And we'll post a picture
ginjo.
Of this to our listeners so you know what we're talking about.
These classifications, this represents about 30% of the sake that's made in Japan. And so there's a giant amount, 70%, which is kind of like those those boxes of inexpensive wine on the floor in the pallets at the grocery store, cool. right?
Yeah.
But what's really cool is that even though this is only about 30% of the sake that's made in Japan, it's about 98% of what we import. We Ooh. Get almost everything that comes into the U.S. from Japan is these higher grades of sake. This is very cool.
So we don't mess around with the...
If we're bringing it, if we're going to spend the money to get it all the way over here.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's good to know, especially when we're categorizing things at a restaurant for ourselves. Like, is this higher quality or lower quality? We're still getting the upper cut of
yes.
the wider swath of
You're
going to
be okay.
Thing.
Yeah. It sounds like you're going to be okay.
Yeah. It's all very, very good quality. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is really kind of neat. So these are sakes that we've just tasted that have a little bit less polished rice. That's why they're not quite as leading with that mm-hmm. big banana fruity mm-hmm. thing that you had going on before.
Yeah.
And if we're going to go to round three, we're going to kind of go to a whole nother
A group. Whole new world.
A whole new world. All right, let's reset. Yeah, we'll be back reset. For round three.
Oh boy. Here we go.
A quick save the date for you guys. Something really cool coming up in Charlotte is the Charlotte Wine and Food Week. That's April 26th through May 1st of this year. Visit charlottewineandfood.org to find out what's going on. Abby and I will be there at the Grand Tasting, but they've got all sorts of things going on, and it's all for an incredible cause. Check out their website again, charlottewineandfood.org. Read about the charities, sign up for events when those tickets go on sale, and we'll see you there.
If you think or know you had COVID-19, you can be around others after 10 days since symptoms first appeared and after 24 hours with no fever without fever-reducing medication and after other symptoms have improved. If you have tested positive for COVID-19 and you had no symptoms, you can be around others 10 days after you got tested for COVID-19. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/coronavirus.
All right, back for round three.
Round three.
Sake, Sarah. She's treating us to quite an array here. So talk us through what's next.
Yeah, so we have the Dragon God.
Ooh, it's Dragon God.
Which
Dragon
is God. Just kind of badass, just to have to say. It's Dragon God.
Now, the first thing I'm going to point out, and again, for our listeners who cannot see this, and we'll post some pictures of this, little spoilers. Sake Sarah has provided us essentially like the curriculum.
Yeah.
So we can see the cheat sheet here. And the first thing that sticks out to me, maybe because it's in red, is the ABV.
Holy shit.
16 to 17%.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah. So this is an interesting sake for a number of reasons. So first of all, I hope one day I might marry the Toji. The guy who actually makes this is like my secret crush. Everybody makes fun of me. Yeah, it's kind of a
We'd
thing.
We never make fun of you.
We support you in this endeavor.
We will help you get
we'll
there.
We'll call him on the air.
Yeah.
Let's go.
So yeah, Ryujin Shuzo is in Gunma Prefecture, which is sort of a landlocked prefecture that's just north and west of where Tokyo is located. So this is a Ginjo sake, and it has a little bit of added alcohol to it. And a lot of people wonder, like, well, if sake can ferment up to 20%, like, why would they add extra alcohol? What's that about? So first of all, sake will sort of finish its fermenting usually at a pretty high level. And just like with spirits, they will usually sort of dilute it down a little bit. And they don't dilute it down to make more of it. They dilute it down because it's hard to drink large amounts of things that are 20% alcohol, right? It just kind of...
It just depends on how long you've been training
like
for it.
You looked at me with some pointed stare.
Not, you know, that just was poor timing. I had just happened to take my first
I'm not offended.
Taste
I can handle it.
Of this one.
This is a crowd pleaser. This
wow.
is so good.
This yeah. one... Just,
it hit me in the back of my teeth.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. So what I'm pointing out here, though, is that they this is not a junmai sake. Junmai means pure rice. Mm. It's kind of a frustrating word in the lexicon of sake because it's a proper noun because it's its own category. Mm. But it's also an adjective. So when you see junmai, it can if it's just by itself junmai, it's a category, which is on that sort of bottom left corner of the pyramid. But you'll notice everything on that left side of the pyramid is modified by junmai in some way. So it just means that no alcohol has been added. Basically, if you don't see junmai, like here it's just ginjo, it means that they have added a little bit of alcohol. And they add a little bit of alcohol because alcohol, again, as I mentioned earlier, is a solvent. So when you are finished with the fermentation and you have all this rice that's still in suspension in this fluid, they add a tiny little bit of brewer's alcohol and it kind of goes in and it helps to pull out more aroma from the rice. There was a period of time when some people sort of looked down on sakes that had added alcohol as being less than. And this had to do with, you know, historically some stuff connected to World War II when there was a rice shortage and there were sakes that were really heavily diluted with, like, they're basically more like, you know, moonshine or grain alcohol than they were actually like sake. But the amount of alcohol is highly regulated for these specially designated types of sake. And so it's not at all used to dilute it in any way. It just sort of amps up the aroma that you're getting.
Yeah. I will say with this one, I liked it better before the popcorn. It got more astringent after the popcorn. That's what I got. I don't know, Jen, if you had a chance to try that.
For me, the thing that I want with this is like a heavy, like, noodle dish. Like a
Is that what you would do, Sarah?
Yeah. So, I mean, this to me, like, first of all, anything that is like Korean barbecue or like big, rich flavors, meats, fat, it's mouth-filling, it's juicy, it has a tremendously long finish. There's a lot of umami here. It also has a twinge of sweetness here. So you'll notice that. And it also has a bit, they're using a yeast here, which is giving it a little hint of almost like a licorice note, almost like fennel. Really kind of a neat little thing that sometimes.
Thank you for saying that because it was driving me nuts.
Yeah. That is, this continues to be a thread that we have woven throughout all of these episodes of, like, when you have the vocabulary, the sense comes alive.
It's on the nose, especially the, the fennel.
It is, and, you know, some, for some people that can be off-putting, but it doesn't taste like black jelly beans. So let me make that clear.
Let us put you at ease, dear listener.
I don't like black jelly beans.
I don't either.
But this is nice.
You mentioned Korea and or Korean barbecue, and that made me think of, there is an alcohol that they make in Korea which starts with a
soju.
So how is soju different from sake?
So soju is a spirit, and it is not made exclusively from rice.
Okay.
Yeah. So and that's a whole nother episode. I can bring shochu and soju.
Oh, great.
We can taste it.
All right. Well, this is what our show is now.
This is it. This is just it's amused bouche with sake, Sarah.
Oh, okay. So I have a question because you alluded to this earlier, where, you know, you don't pour your own sake. That's sort of a faux pas.
Right.
In the spirit of community, in the spirit of all being on the same level, you pour for each other.
Yeah.
But what if I'm sitting at the table and I'm thirsty and I'm like, hey, neighbor, can you pour me some sake? So how do you convey that?
This is my favorite. So basically, if you are dining with friends and your glass is empty, you will pick up the sake bottle and offer it to somebody else.
And you just work your way down the line.
Plenty of sake in their glass. And they'll look at you. They look at the bottle. Then they look at your glass and they go, oh. And they will immediately pour for
you.
Oh, my God. That is exactly what I would do.
That is basically how you do it. You're like, let me offer you more so that you notice I'm empty.
Genius. Here you go, boss.
Now I know why my dad keeps trying to offer me more sake.
So that's how it works. And I will say, you know, that these are all things that kind of start off pretty, like, well followed at the beginning.
Yeah.
There's a point where people are like, Just hand me the bottle. We don't need to pour anymore.
We all devolve a little.
We're all family now. It's all good. So anyway, so the dragon god, I will just point out too with this that the Toji has invented his own type of koji. This is my heartthrob in the industry.
Yeah. Is he fine? Like,
Horikoshi-san.
Oh shit.
You know, he's fine in his own way.
Okay.
I love a unique,
you know, he's done something to you.
Yeah.
And there's a story in here.
He's just really, really neat. He's got a cult following, you know, it's kind of like when you meet like one of those people that's sort of famous in the wine world or whatever. And you're just like, oh my God.
It's like how it was when you met us.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. Guys, I had a nervous pee before I met these ladies. I just want you to know. So anyway,
we've adopted her. So she's fine now. Her bladder has been relieved.
That's all good. I'm good. Anyway, my point is, so he is so connected to this process of making koji. And as I mentioned, it takes 48 hours. Basically, he will not sleep more than 2 hours at a time through the entire brewing season. So October 1st to the end of April, he personally wants to oversee every single grain of rice that is in the koji room. And so he will lose weight, like 60 pounds sometimes through the growing season.
That's why bears have to sleep during the winter.
He's got attention to detail. He has stamina, and he's a skinny dude.
Yeah,
so,
he's good looking. Occasionally. Half of the year, he's a skinny dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So variety.
But he makes really incredible sake, and we're just honored to have him in the portfolio. So really great stuff. I'm glad you like it.
Really nice.
But I definitely want it with like, dish they have from, Japchae.
Yeah.
With like the egg on it.
Oh, yeah.
And the glassy
noodles.
Richer
food, absolutely. Yeah. And I think this is definitely calls for richer ramen, you know, the tonkotsu ramen. Also, honestly, like burgers, guys. Like, go for your burger night. Like, this sake is going to.
We have plenty of heavy food here in the Queen City to pair with this. I think we've got
pork belly. You know,
down to Ace Number Three.
Ace Number Three coming up on the podcast soon. So maybe we'll have to do some pairings.
So we have one more, and we're going to taste this one cold as well as warm. And you all had asked again about quality. And this is, again, the highest grade of sake. This is a Junmai Daiginjo. We're going to taste it cold, and we're going to taste it warm. And I'm really excited because there are many people who will say, oh, you shouldn't drink Daiginjo sake warm. And that may be true of many. But for this particular sake, I think it's dramatically affected by being served warm. So
first of all, the bottle is adorable.
It's so cute. It's a little kitty cat holding a little sake bottle.
Yep.
And I'm already just sniffing it, and it's got that green apple going on for me again.
Yeah. So this is, again, a Daiginjo sake, Junmai Daiginjo. So when you see ginjo, ginjo means specialized brewing. There are four types of sake that say ginjo. There's Junmai Daiginjo and Daiginjo. There's Junmai Ginjo and Ginjo. Basically, it means that they've polished the rice more. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to get more of those fruity and floral types of characteristics. This is interesting, though, because this sake is made with an heirloom rice called omachi. And I like to compare omachi. Omachi, to me, is a little bit like, you know, the Sauvignon Blanc of grapes. Like I like to compare it to sort of French, like Sancerre, Puy Fumé, because there's a kind of grassy, herbal pungency to this, a little earthiness. So where that Yamada Nishiki was like the cheerleader at school, right? And the Gohyaku Mangoku was like the shy guy. Well, this is kind of the hippie guy, you know? Like, a little herbal. Yeah, really different. So this is from Tatenokawa, which is a very famous brewery in Yamagata, Japan. They just did a partnership with the Foo Fighters. So there is Foo Fighter sake now, guys, and it is...
Oh, my God, Sarah.
Yep, Dave Grohl. I really should say he's my boyfriend, but no.
Look, I'm seeing them in April, I think.
Yeah.
So exciting.
It's a bucket list thing for me.
It's going to be awesome.
I'm reading his book right now, actually.
Yeah, I'm a complete fan.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah,
well, from Virginia, so.
Kind of bad, I know.
That's our hometown.
Wait, is that a thing? I thought he's from Seattle because of Nirvana.
No, he just traveled there. Oh. I'll loan you the book. You'll read the story.
All right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is called Cat's Meow because there is actually a brewery.
There's
cat.
A real cat in it.
There's a real cat, not in the sake, but at the brewery.
It dips its paw in every vat.
Yes, it's like beckoning cat into the sake. Just dips it right in.
Is there a name for that?
Yes, it's called a Manuki Neko. It's a welcoming, a beckoning cat.
Oh, got it.
And actually, it's interesting because they will beckon with different paws, and one paw is beckoning more money, and the other paw is beckoning more customers.
I learned that on NHK.
Yeah, so cute. So the reason why it's called Tatenyan is because cats in Japanese go nya nya as opposed to meow meow.
Okay.
So it's literally the meow of the Tatenokawa cat. So a really beautiful sake. Let's try it warm. I'd like you guys to try this.
Yeah. This is a very, I really enjoy
it. Is this another one with popcorn we should keep
You
doing?
Can please try. Every sake and popcorn. I'm just going
to I mean, you got to eat. So you might as well eat popcorn.
So one of these days, if I come back, we can do a real food pairing thing because the science is so interesting.
Maybe she'd like to come to Charleston with us, Jen.
I mean.
I was thinking about that. And if I get Yoji from Denver and do a whole sushi.
Are you guys going to the Charleston Wine and Food Festival?
Oh, we should, but this is just for Jen's bachelorette party we're planning.
Let's get it going.
I'm very lucky to have a project manager at the helm of the planning of this endeavor.
That's exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you. Very lucky.
Since this is our final tasting, I would love us to cheers one more time. Kanpai.
Yeah, one more. Kanpai. Kanpai shimashou. Kanpai.
Ooh, it totally changes it. I would never know those are the same.
Yeah.
Ever.
Really, really interesting.
That is so good.
So here that fruitiness is enhanced. In fact, I get a little bit almost more of like almost like banana bread kind of thing going on. That spreading deliciousness just lingering on the palate. So many people sort of under this. The hardest part about sake is that there's not a black and white answer. John Gottner is famous for saying it's as clear as Nigori, which is cloudy sake, and it's not clear. It's hard to sort of give, to me, the only answer that's really black and white is that sake is made from rice, right? You can sort of bank on that. There are a lot of people who want to sort of speak in absolutes, and they're like, oh, well, it's daiginjo, it should only be cold, or has alcohol added, it's not going to be good quality, or it's hot, it's bad.
Those people sound boring.
They are boring. Well, it's kind of like someone who says, I don't drink Merlot. Okay, there's something wrong with
me. There's some good Merlots.
Amazing. Yeah. We should talk about that too.
Yes, we should.
So anyway, lots of things to go over. But I thought this was sort of a fun thing to show you guys because you were talking a bit about this when you'd gone to Open Rice.
Yeah.
About the qualities. And, there are sakes that when they're warmed go down like gasoline, and sometimes you don't want to experience that again. But when it's the right sake and it's warm to the right temperature, it can just be so good. So.
Well, and I think, again, this is a pretty good example because, how long has it been? An hour and a half or so. And we have learned an incredible amount of information about this thing that 6 months ago we knew very little. So going in, we were ignorant as to what we were ordering, what any of it meant, what we should pair it with. And obviously you have given us a wide swath of information, but I think for anybody who's interested, there's not a high barrier to entry here to learn about it. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So this has been an incredibly fantastic experience, Sake Sarah. I'll speak for both of us.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. When I say this has been an absolute pleasure and probably not the last time we're going to have you on. So get looking out
for more.
Phone
a friend, your local Som. I'm here for you.
Local Som. Sarah Som. Som Sarah? Sake Sarah.
We'll work on it.
We'll work on your jingle because I think there's a, what was the song that you were going to sing earlier? That's the start of your.
It's a country song.
It's a country song.
Oh Lord. No.
Bust it out. That might be on a future episode.
That's right.
Tune in for that in the future. But. All right, Sake Sarah, thank you so much for joining for this batch. My name is Jen.
My name is Abby.
And this has been
Amused Boosh.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.